It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that is pretty much everything there is to know about my butt.
Couldn't you tell by the look on my face that I really wanted you to stop talking about that?
Oh, yes. I knew. I suspected even before, but yeah.
Okay.
No, so you were. It was 5:58, and Trish was coming in from doing something outside, and I was like, "Do you see any sign of William?" She said, "No." She said, "What time is that?" I said, "It's 5:58." She said, "He's William late." And I said, "Yep." And she said, "Did he say bon to you?" And I said, "Yep." I got the bon first thing this morning.
That's a thing now.
That's been a thing for a while.
I guess so. I didn't know. I thought it was just a thing for you, though. I didn't know it was a thing for anybody else.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody else cares. But, yeah, every Thursday I email William. And the thing is, there was a time where you might occasionally have... I mean, you never just, like, flaked. But there were times where you were like, I actually forgot until you sent that. Those were years ago. But I do that with everybody. Like, I always am, like, a reminder the day before and
that's
stuff.
That's nice. That's nice.
I do that with my... Well, no, I think it's just based out of my own neuroses. Okay. But
I appreciate it, though.
But, yeah, so every Thursday I send William a thing that explains to him what time, which never changes, what location, which never changes, and how many episodes we have to record. Because, you know, sometimes with vacations and stuff, we have to record extra ones.
Right.
And he always responds and just says, bon. And it's to the degree that, like... I've sent that, and I mentioned something else in it, and he responded to that part, and then, like, we talked about other things, but I couldn't let it go, because I'm like, you have to say bon. Say bon, or is no good.
That's French for good. B-O-N.
Say bon, or is no bon.
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 I do not know why that started, but now it's like, I can't answer any other way, really.
Yeah, no,
unless we're
tried
talking
a couple times in different languages. Yeah. It was not okay.
Yeah, unless we start talking about something else, but... Otherwise, I have to answer that way.
I feel like it's because it was our special code word. Like, so if you were being held against your will. Of course, now that I've told everybody, then
yeah,
I'd just
know.
Be like, say that French thing. That French bone thing. I'm assuming your kidnappers are not that educated in
linguistics. Yeah, right.
So, anyway, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that holds the fate of your life and your very soul in the palm of its metaphorical hand. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 321.
321.
Yep.
And 320 was a backup episode. Oh, which, by the way, my boss has told me there is not an equivalent, a male equivalent to the Golden Girl at the University of Iowa.
Okay.
The drum major has a very specific job involving leading the marching band, which is not... which is not a counterpoint to the Golden Girl, because the Golden Girl is an individual thing. She doesn't, like, lead the drill team or something like that.
I see.
So. Yeah, so it's actually been 2 weeks, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess it has.
How has your 2 weeks been?
Well, I mean, it's been fine, but I didn't really think about it being 2 weeks. My father's birthday happened, which was... Mm-hmm. We went back to celebrate that. One of my nephews, who is in college, started attending the university, or Iowa State University.
Oh.
I think I might have mentioned that before. But that's only been for the last couple semesters, or last school year, I guess. And he recently got a business opportunity back in Alaska. So we thought he'd be in Iowa for a while. But it was just this kind of this past year that he's been in, or this past 9 months he's been in Iowa, and now he's going to go back again, which was kind of sad because on all the time he was here, my wife and I only saw him like twice. But, you know, the rest of my family saw him quite a bit, so that's good, especially for Dad. So we saw him for the last time for a long time. What else? I'm not working on personal writing projects at the moment because I'm helping, you know, our friend Mick. His mom's working on a book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A book and all this other stuff, and so I've been kind of dedicating all my time to that. Fortunately, a lot of the research that I have to do for it is kind of stuff that's helpful to my other project too, so even though I'm not writing technically, I am doing work that's going to help me when I go back to writing.
Yeah, give you a sharper
eye. So yeah, exactly. So that's pretty cool. And it's been fun working with her, because I've known her for so long, but it's also good to be working with somebody on something. Working all by myself all the time can get pretty tiring, so.
I keep hoping I can get another human to do a podcast with me.
So that's been good. Seems like in the last 2 weeks we must have seen something.
I would think.
You know, that I could talk about, but I don't really remember.
Still playing Mass Effect Andromeda?
Oh, yeah, right. Mass Effect, sure. Yeah, we've been doing that. And my wife likes it quite a bit still. It just really has that space cowboy vibe that she likes so much. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed watching it. There's problems with it, not just bugs either, but, you know, things about the story that aren't as compelling as the original installments. I mean, I could imagine someone who's a huge fan of the original games feeling like, this game is so different, and maybe not being a fan of it.
See, and I feel like I've got so much advanced warning now that I'll be able to cope.
But the things that it has going for it are all the things that my wife happens to like, so it doesn't matter if it's different. She likes it, so, and I like it too. So, but yeah, I mean, someone waiting for the bugs to get ironed out, I can totally understand, because it's pretty buggy. We always encounter bugs when we buy games, because we buy them pretty early, but this has a lot of bugs in it. Like, yeah, I would say too many. If people are complaining about it and saying that it's just kind of ridiculous that they released a game like this when it wasn't quite ready, I think I'd have to agree with that. There are some serious problems.
But it appears to not be unplayable, and therefore it's still better than Assassin's Creed Unity when it first...
Okay, well, no, it's not unplayable. But, I mean, there's lots of... I mean, there's several quests that you can't complete because of problems. I mean, it's not good.
That is not good.
But it's a very fun game to play, or at least we're having a lot of fun with it. And in fact, she might complete it here real soon, and maybe we'll even go through it again, because there's a few... I don't know if you can get all the trophies in one playthrough. I mean, like Dragon Age, you actually have to play it multiple times, yeah, because there's trophies for different classes, and you can't change class in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
This one, you probably could get all the trophies in one playthrough, but she's not going to manage that, so maybe we'll take another shot at it.
Yeah.
And... So maybe we'll go through it twice. But yeah, it's pretty fun still. I can't really... I mean, we're excited about Wonder Woman coming up in less than... Well, it'll be 4 weeks here.
Yeah. Guardians.
Yeah, we'll watch...
We're going to, I think, go
Guardians
this weekend.
I don't know if we'll see it in the theater or not, but we might.
Trish's sister is coming this weekend, and so...
Oh, okay.
Like, Trish said, she's going to come this weekend, and I said, you know, that's also the opening weekend for Guardians, and I know how she is. Trish tends to like doing opening weekend. I don't in general, but I'm willing to. So as soon as I said that, they were like, oh, yeah, let's do that.
Did we talk about... Bates Motel ending?
No, but I mean, I knew it did.
Yeah.
Okay, see, I thought you were getting it, like, via Netflix or whatever, so I thought you were going to have to wait to finish
it. No, the great thing is that, you know, when you go online to watch something, these days you almost always have to, like, put your cable company in.
Yeah.
And, what is it, A&E or something, is what they're on, and so we had to do that, but we thought, well, they won't let us watch it, because as soon as they see that we're with MediaCom and they see what plan we have, we don't get A&E.
Mm-hmm.
But we could watch it anyway.
Huh.
So we've been watching it, and A&E, their site works like a lot of other sites we try to watch television on these days don't seem to work very good, but A&E's site always worked great. So yeah, we were able to keep up with it right up until the end.
Cool.
And it didn't end the way I thought it was going to end.
Now, as something that you could actually spoil for me, and as somebody who hates spoilers, please be careful, because you're really good at accidental spoilers.
Okay, well.
Not quite as good as Dan, but pretty close.
Let's just say that it didn't end the way I thought it was going to end. I was satisfied with how it ended, though.
Mm.
I think some people were... I think some people wanted it to end a different way, but I was surprised at the direction they took it, but... In the end, I thought that was a perfectly good way to take it.
My boss has also been pushing me on this one, to watch this one. She was into it too. That the fact that you both are, coupled with the fact that it had what, 4 seasons?
5.
5, and now it's done. I'm like, that increases the odds I'll watch it. But unfortunately, Trish isn't interested, and that decreases the odds for me. But I think it's pretty high on the list of things that I keep meaning to watch.
So. I mean, each season, I believe, is only 10 episodes.
Oh,
so,
good, good.
So that's not even a huge time commitment, really. Yeah. But, I mean, I would still recommend it to anyone. I mean, it was consistently good. Just a very good show, I thought. And I'm still watching other things, but nothing really to talk about. What about you? 2 weeks. A lot to talk about, probably.
Yeah, I think I've forgotten a lot of it. I'm still playing Shadow of Mordor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what?
That game is insane.
You know what's funny? We were watching iZombie, mm-hmm. and there was a point in the show where one of the characters was playing a video game, and they were playing that video game.
I want to say somebody recently told me that. It must have been Dan, because he's the only other person who talks about iZombie.
I only knew, though, because you said talk so much about it.
So you knew based on what I said. Yeah.
Well, because they showed the screen, I couldn't tell by that. But he said a few things. Something, what's the thing of you're connected to some
Wraith?
Yeah, something like they said made reference to that, and yeah. So that's how I knew what it was. But they didn't mention it by name, so I thought, what a weird way. I mean, if you're only going to make such a vague reference to something, why make it a real something? Right?
I can't remember if it was Arrow or if it was The Cape, but it was some shitty superhero show that had somebody clearly playing World of Warcraft, and I don't even know that they ever mentioned what it was, but I could clearly tell because I was still playing it at that point, and I'm like, I literally have been right there.
Yeah, I find that very strange. It's like, well, either it's going to be a real thing and you're going to give it product placement and make some money off of it.
It's just like an Easter egg, you know?
Oh, Easter egg. Okay, sure. Sure, I suppose.
I know that game.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I just thought it was weird, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I noticed that while I was watching iZombie.
Yeah, that game is weird. It's that Nemesis system again, which I'm really glad I waited for, because it's what's awesome and terrible about it. There's all these orcs in the game. And, I mean, there's just orcs everywhere. But there's orc captains and war chiefs and things like that. And they have, like, names and they have, like, strengths and weaknesses and things. And a lot of the game is, like, hunting them down or them trying to kill you and things like that. And they remember when they killed you. And if they kill you, they get more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you kill them, they die, and somebody comes in and takes their place. Like, people get promoted because you killed the guy who was there. And they have these events that they're doing, and they're quests on the map. But they're usually optional. So it's like, hey, this guy's going to recruit, or this guy's going to have a feast, or this guy's going to have a hunt. And you can go there and disrupt it. But if, like, you don't disrupt it, he gets stronger. If he kills you, obviously he gets stronger. If you kill him, then that's good. But also, if you die anywhere, things advance, so all the quests that were out there get done, and they get stronger. And meanwhile, if a dude has no name and he kills you, he's got a name now, and he gets promoted, and he gets a little, like, adjective to him. Now he's whatever the whatever. But what they didn't tell me is... sometimes, when you kill somebody, they come back.
Oh.
So sometimes, you have this freaking captain who's really tough, because he's immune to, like, so many things, and I don't even remember how, but I finally killed him. It was really hard. He had killed me a couple times. And I did it, and then he just showed up another time. And he's like, you thought you killed me, but I'm still got all the same strengths and weaknesses. It's insane. But I am progressing, and the part that I thought was the end of the game is, like, really the halfway mark.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good, because I was like, this is going really fast. And I suddenly was like, these big war chiefs I'm supposed to be scared of, they're not that strong. And so I took them all out. And now there's like a whole other map and things like that. But it is like it was advertised. Like, a lot of the stuff now, I mean, there are still new challenges. The new map is harder and stuff like that. But I'm kind of a one-man badass now. And I haven't even got the ability to, like, make them into my unwilling servants. Which comes later. But yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm like, okay, there's a crowd of 50 of them. They're gonna need more help. Like, I can do that. I'm pretty badass all by myself. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it was very frustrating. I thought I might stop, because it's just stressful. Like, more than other games, because there's no safe spot. So you're just always in enemy territory. And yeah, so it's freaky. But yeah, so still enjoying that. Probably about halfway through it. Although I get the sense that I'm way more powerful than I'm supposed to be now. Based on, like, because some abilities you buy, and then some abilities are unlocked with certain quests. And the abilities that are going to be unlocked with the quests I'm about to do are way higher up earlier in the process than where I am now in the advancement table. So, but that works for me. I love being overpowered.
How did that happen?
Because I just wandered around and I did stuff not really. It's an open world game.
Oh, okay.
So I just went around and did other crap. And
that happens with my wife, too, I think. I think sometimes she...
Yeah, in general, when there's a thing where you can grind, I frequently play very conservatively.
Yeah, so then when she faces something, her, you know, I think the game designers think that a person's going to face this foe a lot earlier.
Yeah.
And with a lot lower level, but she's leveling up because she's doing all this side stuff, and so by the time she reaches that enemy, it's not that hard.
Kind of like when I put 160 hours into Final Fantasy X, of which the last... like 50 of them was just grinding before the end guy, and then I got to the end boss of that whole game, killed it in 2 hits. Might have overdone it. Movies. Watched a lot of movies. I'm still watching the new Mystery Science Theater, and I'm back on board. The first episode, as we talked, was kind of mixed. It was a little bit of a hiccup. I've now gone through 3 more. I like them.
Well, that's good.
Good show. It is sort of what you want. It's updated a little bit, but it's still very much in line with that. Now that I think it helps, I told you that the robot voices were different and that was weirding me out. I have now identified who those voices are, and they are comedians I already know. So that helps in my head. I think they just picked better movies. I think that first movie was just not a lot to work with.
Okay.
But so I watched that. I watched a lot of dumb shit. I shouldn't talk about most of it. let's focus on the big one, which is finally saw... Oh, no, there are actually 2 I got to talk about. Finally saw Arrival.
With Amy Kate, Adams?
Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, we saw that.
Where the giant cough drop spaceships come down and they try and learn the...
Yep, we saw that.
...thing. I'd been meaning to see it for a while. I particularly had friends who were like, I think you're going to feel strongly about it. You're either going to really like it or really not like it.
I didn't even think about whether or not you'd like it.
Would you like to know?
No. Right. Yes, please tell me.
Well, it turns out they were wrong, but they were wrong because they were right. I'm fairly middle of the road on it because most everything either that I either really loved or really hate.
Okay.
But I will say this. It is far and away the best mainstream, like, first contact movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
But I will also say this, that's a very low bar.
Yes, it is.
Most first contact movies are shit. I mean, we got Contact, we got The Arrival starring Charlie Sheen that somehow spawned 2 sequels, I don't know how. You know, we got Independence Day, but that's kind of a different deal. But yeah, they're usually not good. And this one was much better. Yeah, just everything about it. Like, the story was really original, except for the parts where it was incredibly cliche and derivative. Most of the plot points were like it was really well acted. The writing was really good, except for the few spots where it was just atrocious. The plot made good sense and seemed realistic to me, except in the places where it seemed arbitrary and dumb. I will say one thing. I have a very, very limited knowledge of linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
And they did really bad with linguistics. They did not do... They did to linguistics what Independence Day did to computer viruses, basically. Like, that was some bullshit there. But overall, I mean, I think I would recommend it. I think I liked it. But, yeah, it was very conflicting. It was really nicely shot and really well performed. Like the production components were... wonderful.
I think our take on it is very similar. That's probably why when I saw it, I didn't really think... I mean, I don't think I recommended it to anybody. Not because I thought it was bad, but because I'm probably like you. It puts me in the middle of the road because there were some things I thought were really cool, but they were always counterbalanced by something I thought was not so cool. So it was like, okay, that's a okay movie. But yeah, just okay.
It was fairly original.
Sure.
In its story, for the most part, and it, I'm really appreciating. I've kind of not to disparage politically charged terms these days, but I've kind of recently got woke with regard to J.J. Abrams.
Okay.
I've kind of finally seen that all his suspense is just, we don't tell you chunks of the information that you would rightfully know.
That's right.
And consequently, films that can create suspense for me, or I guess confuse mystery for me,
mm-hmm.
without resorting to that, I give them big credit.
Sure, sure.
And I feel like this movie did that kind of in spades. Like it was there a lot, so I appreciated that. I do have another one to talk about, just because I don't even know. So, my wife started watching a movie, and she was enjoying it, and she thought maybe I would enjoy it. And after she'd gone maybe a half hour, 45 minutes into it. And so she stopped, she had stopped watching for some reason, and she's like, I think you might like this too. So, few days later, we're like, what do we watch? She's like, why don't we watch that movie? We can start it over. You can see the whole thing. I'm like, okay, great. It sounds awesome. The movie is called A Bigger Splash. It's 2015. I know that specifically. I'll get to that later. In this movie, Tilda Swinton, already,
it's pretty good.
Plays a rock star whose height was sort of in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure she's basically an amalgam of Bowie and Marianne Faithfull, is sort of the vibe I'm getting here. And of course, it's Tilda Swinton, so she kind of looks like Marianne Faithfull and David Bowie had a kid. So. but this is set in the present, and she's still a musician, she still tours and stuff, but she had like throat nodules or something, so she recently had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, she's not supposed to speak.
Mm.
So for pretty much the movie, she doesn't talk.
Mm.
She occasionally croaks out something or whispers. There are flashbacks and she talks in, but in the movie, she doesn't talk.
Okay.
Intriguing. I find this kind of cool. I was told this beforehand. Kind of neat. She is recuperating in a lovely villa on a southern Italian island with her boyfriend. Gorgeous man named Paul. Not an actor I recognize. Recuperating is mostly laying around naked, swimming, and having sex.
Okay.
Lots of nudity in this movie, including dude nudity. A lot of it. It's wonderful. Opening shot is Tilda Swinton naked. That was kind of fun. Whatever. Sounds great. It's wonderful. Now, the rub happens. Showing up to the island, unannounced, is her dear friend / ex-lover / ex-manager, the guy who's basically started her career, played by Ralph Fiennes.
Okay.
Also excited. Ralph Fiennes. Awesome. He is bringing with him his young adult daughter, who he didn't know existed until like a year ago.
Mm.
And so she's spending like the summer with him, and he lives in Rome, but they're coming here. And unfortunately, they came at a time when there's a festival going on, so there's nowhere to stay in town, so they end up staying with them. Hijinks ensue.
Okay.
This sounds like a great movie to me.
Well, I guess.
It sounds like it has a tremendous potential. Oh my god. This is... The title for this movie should be... White People Should Not Have Money. Like, this is just... privileged people with too much time on their hands not, like, just fucking themselves over and being... They're not even being awful. I mean, in some cases they're being awful, but a lot of it's just being dumb. And I didn't say, the young adult daughter is played by Dakota Johnson, who plays the lead in the 50 Shades of Grey movies, and in fact... the first 50 Shades of Grey movie also came out in 2015. So she was basically making these the same year.
Mm.
It is amazingly shot. It is brilliantly performed. It is just confusing and uncomfortable and eventually kind of horrifying.
Mm.
And it is a French-Italian co-production, which means it is artistic and surreal as fuck, of course, and gets you no clear resolution. And what really weirds me out is apparently it's a remake of a movie from, like, the 60s, which I don't understand. But it's, for its bizarreness, you can watch it. And like I said, it is gorgeous. It's a lot of nudity. If you ever wanted to see older, nude Ralph Fiennes all over this, which, by the way, they nailed the look of rich Americans who vacation in the tropics a lot. And then get old. Like, him without his shirt on looked kind of like my grandpa without his shirt on. Like, that weird, there's that pot belly, and there's very tan but kind of leathery, wrinkling skin. Like, he absolutely looked like my grandfather looked in all the pictures of them vacationing through Europe and stuff like that. But it's, yeah, there's a lot of, like, awkward silences and conversations that just sort of end and you don't feel like the conversation actually ended, but then they just stop talking. I don't recommend it. It's weird as fuck, though. Really weird. I do have one other thing I want to talk about. It's both a confession and an announcement, so that's handy. So, as we know... I really don't like our current president.
Right.
Still consider him an idiotic. Is idiotic or imbecilic more damning? Because whichever one is that. man-child without a single drop of human empathy within his body. And he's dumb. And, yeah. also, I'm tired of making fun of him. It's not funny to me anymore. That's become a thing. Like, I'm tired of laughing at him. I'm just sad and angry all the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we all know I felt like this. We all know immediately was like, shit, we got to start donating to the right places. And I believe I talked before that created this whole spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
What I haven't told anybody, well, I haven't told anybody on the podcast at least, is now that it's like 7 months along since the election, haven't done it. Haven't actually donated any money.
Oh. I thought you had a plan of who to donate to.
Totally did.
Oh.
Didn't do it.
Oh.
Because I'm a lazy motherfucker. But I can now say this week, we have done it. We have donated to 11 charities on a recurring basis. It's a small amount, but we're going to do it every month.
Sure.
Except for Emma Goldman Clinic won't let you do a recurring one, so... I just gave them a little money, and I'm like, I don't know if I'll just try and remember to do that every month, or if I'll give them the bulk at once, like for the year.
Sure.
But there were 11 of them, and I do want to talk about them, and so far as I can remember them off the top of my head. Planned Parenthood, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Goldman, because that basically we went for Planned Parenthood National and Planned Parenthood Local, which in our case is Emma Goldman Clinic. It's not technically Planned Parenthood, but it serves the same function.
Right.
So those two, ACLU, of course.
Okay.
Shoot, I should remember these better. Muslims of America Legal Fund, which is a Muslim American Legal Defense Fund.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it's called now, but it's they changed it recently. But it's the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund.
Okay.
I think the acronym is still there, but they changed the name because now it says Latino instead. So the Center for Reproductive Rights, I think, is what it was.
Okay.
Which is also essentially a legal defense fund. A lot of legal defense funds. In fact, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, not just general, specifically went for that for the same reason. Trevor Project, because, again, how would you not? Is that 11? I don't know. I feel like I missed something. But
no, I wasn't counting.
Might be everybody. I really should post a list because they're good ones. And a lot of them... Well, but here's the thing. They're all just ones that I already knew and liked and most people know and liked, plus the ones John Oliver recommended back when he got elected. That's where I got a lot of these from.
I see.
I think Trish looked up the Center for Reproductive Rights because that's more fighting the legal battles around reproductive rights.
So. Right.
And for those of you noting the day and everything like that, and there's some stuff to talk about things that the House did today, and I don't want to, because I'm still pissed off about it, so I'm not going to do that. I think that's it.
There was something, there was a question I was going to ask you, and I've totally forgotten what it was. I mean, I didn't remember it today. What I'm remembering is, like, 2 days ago thinking, oh, here's a question I want to ask Tony.
Oh.
And but I don't know what the question is.
There's something I want to tell you. What's that? I want to tell everybody about.
Okay.
It's the story of bratwurst.
Okay.
No, this is, you're going to like this, trust me.
Okay.
Trish was just knowing today that she and I do this. And I knew I did this, and I do this with her. But it is sort of, like, not everybody's... She and I will just come up with weird shit. And we're like, I wonder why that's like that. And then we'll discuss, like, possible reasons just for shits and giggles. Like... And that's what happened today. I was like, well, let me ask you. You've had bratwurst, right? I know you don't eat it now, but back in your meat eating days, had you eaten bratwurst?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I avoided pork, if you recall.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Now, that the only time I violated that rule was I did have pepperoni on pizza and pork sausage on pizza.
Okay.
But I never... Outside of those two transgressions, if you will, I've never had pork chops, for example, or pork anything else.
Well, when I was a kid, I don't remember bratwurst being around. I think I remember trying it, like, at a German restaurant. There was, like, a mixed grill or something, and I remember not liking it.
Oh, really?
I was like, bratwurst is not that good. But I don't remember it being... common, and now it's super common.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I was like, how much of that is time and how much of that is geography? But I'm like, I feel like it's everywhere. We're like, so what happened? Why did that? And actually, now I really like bratwurst, but at the time, I think there's like an aniseed in it or something that kind of served. There's some seasoning in it that just didn't work for me. But I was like, so what happened in between? And so, well, I don't know. And Trish did a little bit of checking on her phone. We were at lunch at the time, and we found the answer. And the answer is Johnsonville Brats. Johnsonville, sausage-making peoples, out of Wisconsin, founded in 1945, but we should note that they are Austrian, not German, because they probably would not have been super popular if they were a German-born company in 1945. But anyway... That is a company, and they do real well, but in 1978, Johnsonville Sr., I don't know if that's their last name or what, dies, and Johnsonville Jr. takes over. In 1985, two major changes happen to the company. One, they start selling outside of Wisconsin. At the time, they were just the state of Wisconsin. And two, they start advertising on TV.
Which I recall.
And that just does it. And it goes from there. And I find this amazing because, yes, Johnsonville brats are everywhere. Like, I'm sure you could go to the grocery store back on the West Coast and you find Johnsonville brats. They're everywhere. But bratwurst is everywhere. Like, Bratwurst is a very common menu item anywhere now. Hmm. Like, if you're more likely, I'd say, to have a bratwurst on the menu than you are to have a hot dog on the menu.
Perhaps.
And I find it fascinating that this one company expanding its sales literally changed American culinary culture, like changed the field of food in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
I find that very, like, weird. and cool, but yeah, so Johnsonville Brats deciding to leave their state and put some ads on TV is the reason why you can get a brat in any town. That was exciting. I feel like we should just call it a night there, because that's good.
Yeah, how do you top that?
But we still have a lot of time left.
All right, so I'll drop something for
that. You know. Oh, I never did explain what the... Oh, well, at this point, you should know what the show's about, so...
Oh, yeah. I explained it. That's true.
So it's hilarious. So somebody decides to listen for the first time, and they're like, episode 321, let's go with that. And they're like, good show, couldn't tell what it was about.
It seems like I really want to remember what it was that I was going to talk to you about.
It does seem like you really want to remember.
Like, usually when I forget something, I just give it up.
And then
Yes, we all know that. But now it's like my brain is doesn't want to give it up for some reason. Like,
there's only 1 minute left in your brain.
Like, yeah, like part of my brain can remember it and says, no, this is important. But the other part says, well, then tell me what it is. Well, anyway.
It's clearly something traumatic.
They're not cooperating.
From your conscious brain.
This is how it works in my brain.
Your mind is just so bicameral.
Or probably or whatever. Probably there's probably 20 different sections and they just can't seem to get it together.
Dodeca-emeral.
Or whatever.
Do to camp.
I mean, that's the way my brain literally feels when, like, I can't remember something. There's, like, part of it that knows I...
Yeah.
It knows I know it.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, and then the other part's like, well, I don't want to get up and go get it. You know, I'm enjoying a TV show. Through it
and you're, like, the synapse is close by, fire in order, and you're like, no, it's still not there. I'm like, so I weird. Almost remembered. That's the thing. You can tell you almost remembered. And I'm like, no. What do we got?
From Mick Hitch.
Oh!
We were just talking about him.
Son of Mick's mom.
Although he signed it Marshall Mick Hitch. It's Marshall DeShiel Hitch III.
Dang.
He's named after his father. And his grandfather, I guess.
Name his child.
Hey, Hat!
What's up?
I have a question that seems to be at the core of my moral code, and I want to hear the answer.
No killing like Batman, because there's issues there.
Competition, cooperation. Two ideas enter, one idea leaves. What happens? What happened? What happens? Because the ink kind of runs out at the
sometimes
end.
Sometimes the hat has trouble. I think it says what happened. By the way, that does remind me, did you watch the Craig video today?
The one about Wonder Woman?
No, the one about Batman.
I didn't see one about Batman.
It's a fan theory that makes Dark Knight Rises not suck.
Oh, well, I saw the title, but I didn't watch it, no.
Yeah. The theory is, at the end of Dark Knight, he kills the Joker... Or I mean, because you don't actually see that, but there's a heavy implication that he kills the Joker. And that traumatizes him. And he's basically... Dark Knight Rises, he's just basically holed up in the mansion, and the entire thing's a fever dream. And there's so many aspects of it that didn't make sense that then make sense with that. It's kind of cool. Maybe I'll make you watch it after we're done.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
So, I don't know if I completely understand.
Right? I've been hanging out with coffee. Okay.
MD.
Competition, cooperation, two ideas enter, one idea leaves. What happens? I have to say, Mick, and you know I love you, that's a terrible core to your moral code. What the fuck does that even... What? No! Change your moral code. First of all, your moral code should have full sentences. It should not reference any Mad Max movie. I'm going to go out on a limb and say nobody should form a moral code around a Mad Max movie, and especially not Beyond Thunderdome, because I know I tried to form my moral code around Who Run Bartertown, and it made me the terrible person I am today.
So you consider that a failure?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No question. Yeah.
But you run Bartertown.
Master Blaster. Bartertown.
Yeah, Master Blaster. Should I say it louder?
Embargo. Off.
You didn't make me say it louder.
No. Embargo. Letting Auntie get away with it.
I don't even think I've seen that whole film, but I've seen that part.
God, you got to see it. In fact, it's been too long. I should see it again. That movie is just flamingly hilarious. It hits the same spot in my heart that Crawl does. Like, it's entertaining, and everybody is trying their damnedest. And, like, it has everything except it forgot to make sense or be good. But everything else is awesome. And they act really hard in it. And, yeah. Competition, cooperation. Two ideas enter, one idea leaves.
Well, what is his dilemma with this? I mean, human beings cooperate and they compete. Both of those things happen.
Yeah, the duality bothers me here. But if I'm going to put this into a quandary with which one could begin to fashion a moral code, I suppose in every social interaction, and I mean that in the sociological sense, not in the pejorative, in every social interaction, you have those two options. Although, I feel like competition is maybe the wrong one there. I think confrontation or conflict is probably better there. Because you can cooperate or you can totally not cooperate, but it doesn't mean you're competing per se. But in every interaction of a social nature, you have the opportunity to cooperate with whatever the other person is doing, or conflict with what the other person is doing. And this is why I don't appreciate the duality, because I feel like you can do both. I mean, obviously, you can break down the granularity of it to a point where each thing, it's like, oh, I conflict with this, I cooperate with this, I conflict with this. But in general, in most interactions, I'd say you absolutely could have something sort of in the middle. Like, I'm going to help you with this, but I'm going to oppose this.
Well, there's also like a whole kind of other level. Like, you know, there are some worldviews.
No, there
are. Objectivism, for example, which seems to believe that competition is the foundational interaction between everything. I mean, there are other types of interaction, but it all comes down to one person or group, or one individual or population of individuals.
Agent is frequently
used. Yeah, sure. An agent. Because it doesn't just apply to people, it applies to animals or whatever, plants.
Fudge.
That there's always a competition between forms, and that all of life basically is defined by who wins. And if that's true, if the objectivists are true, or are right about that, then certain things can follow, and you do have a lot of people in American politics today who seem to, like, doesn't Paul Ryan, isn't he a big fan of Ayn Rand or whatever?
I would not be surprised if he was. I do not know.
Some Republican that you've heard of, like, is openly a fan of objectivism and Ayn Rand and whatever. And so this seems to be, this idea of competition being the foundation of everything is something that's out there, and it's influencing public policy even. But, you know, with the people I've talked to who are familiar with that worldview and several others, it's like, to take Ayn Rand and her philosophy and take it seriously is, I mean, I know a lot of people who do take it seriously, but it's like, how do I say this? It's kind of nuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I'm saying? A lot of the stuff is kind of nuts. And not just nuts in what the implication, like if you take things to their logical conclusion, it's a little bit crazy, but it doesn't even tie with reality, really. I mean, that's not really how things work. Human beings, and actually in nature, if you really understand how evolution works, it's not just about forms beating up on each other.
No, it's whoever, not things fighting and one lives.
In fact, it's...
Well, yeah, the entire concept of social Darwinism, let's say, as an umbrella, is absolute bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
It always has been.
That's right.
It's very strongly held forever by a ton of people, including a bunch of people who don't even identify it as that, but that's what they're talking about.
Right, right. Now, the opposite idea of a circle of life or whatever is also taking it too far, but the truth of the matter is, in evolution, the way it works, first of all, it's not about the survival of any individual, it's the survival of a population.
Yep.
And the population survives because there's a robust relationship of that population with all of the adjacent populations.
Yes. And the overall ecosystem.
Right. So the competition is like a tiny little piece of it. One could argue, I think quite persuasively, that a kind of cooperation, however involuntary, probably plays a larger part. Also, in terms of human interactions, the school of thought that I come from, sociology, insists that cooperation is the foundational human behavior. And not only that, but that a lot of the things people credit to competition as far as achieving, well, when two people compete, it gets better or whatever, the research seems to indicate that there's a lot more progress just about by any measure when people cooperate rather than compete. So, competition is a thing. It's a good thing. It's not really a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing. Mm-hmm. But the notion that it's a better thing than other types of human interaction or interaction generally, or that it's foundational to all interaction, it doesn't seem to tie with any empirical evidence, doesn't tie with any anecdotal evidence that I know of, and just on the face of it seems pretty absurd. But there, like I said, there's the objectivism out there. It's a very popular theory, and we even have high-ranking political officials who embrace it and who think that's how public policy should work. So I don't know.
Well, and I get a lot of social theories start pissing me off in general because they equate with they show a goal for both individuals and society to be things like efficiency or productivity or success, financial or whatever, as opposed to what do you like what makes you feel good, what makes you happy, what makes the maximum amount of people happy,
or even survival. Like human beings, I don't know how anyone can think that for human beings, and maybe even for some other animal species, I don't know how anyone can honestly think that survival is the most important thing when human beings will sacrifice survival for a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For lots of stuff. So it's...
Yeah, and that's the one that got me too, because I am not... I don't care if the human race survives. I really don't. But, and it's not that I'm like, oh, yeah, the rest of the planet is awesome and humans suck and we should take care of the planet and humans can die. No, I'm just like, I don't... I care about it as much as I care about any other species. I don't want to ruin the planet and destroy the environment because I think it's a shitty thing to do. And it has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not I think we can or we are allowed to or God gave it to us or any of them. I'm like, no, it's just shitty to say all the rest of living things and the awesome ones that we like and the ones that we don't like and whatever, fuck y'all. We need a mountain bike. Like, I don't know why that's the first thing that came to mind, but fuck mountain bikes, those assholes. But here's the thing. With all such of these things, cooperation is not a be-all and end-all either, in my opinion, because it can lead... Well, okay, Cooperation is good. Cooperation frequently gets labeled on things that are not. It can be... The flag of cooperation can be used to subsume people's personalities, to cause people to sacrifice things for what they perceive to be the greater good, but is in fact just the louder guy's idea.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call any of that cooperation.
Yeah. But people who are seeking to cooperate will sometimes do those things. Mm. So I feel like the answer is in between, as in always is. Especially when you're putting something on a spectrum, it's like, what's the right thing? Well, probably in the middle.
Well, yeah, I don't think it would be right to ever argue that in every situation you come upon, if cooperation is an option, do that.
Yeah.
Don't cooperate with someone to murder somebody or whatever.
Genocide. All right. How can we?
I'm a team player.
Together. It looks like you've got a handle on it, but if there's any way I can help. Is there filing that needs to be done? Are you keeping record of this?
But
we should put it on YouTube, man.
But
speaking of which, I have a new idea for something I'm going to record to YouTube and put up on our channel.
Oh, good.
I think. But it's pretty easy, so I think I'm going to do it.
But I think it's a fairly clear thing, a fairly common thing in our culture for competition to be really bad. I mean, you hear people all the time practically boast about, I'm such a competitive person, you know, like that's a really good thing to be, and a thing that they'll especially mention this to someone who's a potential employer because they think, well, that's what they want. They want a competitive person. And, you know, we value athletics in public schools more than arts and things like that. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that our media seems to celebrate as heroes are people who are the heads of industry who we think of as competing, and because in that process of competition they've risen to the top, and so we respect that, or sports stars, or politicians who have won elections, therefore, you know, they're good competitors. Our culture seems to put a premium on that, as if our culture agrees with Ayn Rand that competition is the be-all
and all. Our current president operates on that metal 24/7.
Yeah, right.
He can't speak of things without speaking that his side or his opinion is never just correct or good. It's always the most amazing idea or position ever. It is the perfect one. There's never any downside. And also, whatever is the other opinion isn't just wrong. It sucks. It's completely useless. It will kill all your children. It's the worst thing ever. There's no kind of good, kind of bad.
Well,
it's always black and white, and it's always... he's always the amazing side.
And this notion that competition is so... that elevates competition like that is totally cultural. It's not based... I mean, people want to claim, well, this is based on how nature works or something. No, that we've totally made this up, and it's probably very damaging in our culture. But I'll also point this out. Sometimes people who see this and run into difficulty trying to figure out like what their political affiliation should be or what their personal philosophy or moral core or whatever should be. One thing they get hung up on is, well, I believe in individual liberty, and I also believe in free markets, but this hyper-competition thing seems... I don't like that. Well, do these things not go together? And to that I would say... I don't think the notion of, you know, for the last 200,000 years, trade relations, exchange relationships weren't... there's a competitive aspect to it, like you'll haggle over the price of something.
Yeah.
But it's also very cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trade is... for most of human history, trade was not seen as something you do to someone. It was something that you did together.
Yeah.
And sometimes even the social good was included in how you considered whether or not it was a good trade.
And just modern capitalism gives no consideration for sustainability in any form.
Right.
I don't just mean environmentally. I mean in business. Like, if somebody's like, you know, we could do it this way and just make gobs of money, but eventually we're going to run out, or we're going to flood or whatever. Or we could do it this way and it'd be slower, and we won't make as many gobs, but it'll go on and on and on. They're always going to pick the first option.
Yeah, right. So I guess if the conflict here is, well, I'm a you know, a free market individual liberty kind of person, but all of when I get with other people like that, they seem to be in love with competition. Well, there's nothing about the way humans exchange things, the way humans trade, that suggest it's got to be heartless or soulless or just concerned with competition and what the price of something is. In fact, I think most of human history shows that when human beings trade, very often social costs and sustainability comes into it, and that's just a natural way of doing things. The unnatural way of human trade is what we have now in the last several hundred years, where people are only concerned about what the price tag says, where people don't know where something comes from, they don't know who made it, you know, where trading in cash is, I mean, think about it, you know, for most of human history, people weren't trading in cash, they were trading in goods. And, you know, you had to think about that trade in a completely different way than we think about it now. So I don't think being pro-individual liberty and pro-trade necessarily leads to being pro-competition and pro, say, big corporations and all that nonsense. In fact, my personal position on trade is, if it's not fair trade, it's not free trade. So you have to think about what fair trade is in order to even have something that we can consider free trade. So, you know, there's a lot more nuance there than maybe it seems like when you know, hear the news or when you hear people's opinions about it. Maybe that's what Mick's struggling.
So get your shit together,
with.
Mick. Come on.
Well,
I will say, I feel we have to wrap it up here, but I feel that I made more salient points than you did, so I win.
Isn't that always true, though?
In my mind, it is. I'm just saying I'm competing. This is me competing.
The world hates nuance.
Well, so it's not that simple. I came up with the greatest joke ever the other day, but I can't tell it. I've told it to two people, and I think that's the only two people I'll ever be able to tell it to, for two reasons that are both difficult. One is it requires very specific information beforehand, and it's the sort of thing that if I had to tell you all that leading up, it would definitely harm the joke.
Okay.
And the other is it's super offensive.
Oh.
So yeah, it would be inappropriate to tell in most cases anyway. But on top of that, even if I had those kind of balls, like, everybody would be like, I don't get what? Why? But that's too bad, because it was the most hilarious thing ever. But I told the producer, and I told my boss, so that's all good.
Okay.
Yeah, we gotta wrap up here. I should admit, I didn't really mention the book. I have been working on it, but it's a very slow trickle. There's been a lot going on. Things have been kind of stressful lately. I got really sick for a little while and stuff, so I haven't been able to focus on that. Also, work has been really busy, which just me, so it's more draining. So generally by the time I come home, I'm just like, yeah, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And on the weekend, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just going to sleep and do nothing. And, you know, so I mean, then that's good. I'm not unhappy at work.
Right.
In fact, it's kind of better to, you know, give me stuff to work on or whatever. But it means that later on, I'm like, hey, you should do that writing. I'm like, eh. But it is still coming along.
Good.
Slowly. That's it, people. So listen to us again next week and the week after that, you get the idea. Like us on Facebook. Somebody do it. And also, please write in. When I start begging... I know it seems like, but you only go through like one question. Yes, but there is a finite number of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I start begging, that means we're getting low. So please write themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with your little comments, topics, questions, things like that. Keep them brief for the sake of hand cramp with the hat writing it, because the hat doesn't even have hands, so that's terrible. It's just like a phantom cramp. I want you guys to write. I don't want you guys to send me 30 questions, like, by yourself.
Mm.
Like, you know, small, one, two, three. These work, you know?
We have run out, haven't we? Didn't we have one show
where
we
had one where it was empty?
We looked in the hat and there
freaky.
Was nothing.
And
we thought the hat was broken.
And when you look into the hat and it's empty, the hat looks bad. And, yeah. Anyway, that's it. So we will see you next week. And then we'll tell you the fate of your soul.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.